Bikuach HaRamban Milchamot Hashem. We're beginning the Ramban's debate. And the Ramban is speaking, the Ramban quotes from the Talmud in Sanhedrin. And the Talmud in Sanhedrin says as follows. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Braisa, we have a Tanai quote that's been validated. Chamisha Talmidim Ayu Lo LiYeshu. Yeshu had five disciples, five students. And the Talmud tells us a seemingly almost midrashic story. It tells us his students' names were Matai, Nakai, Netzer, Ubonai, Vitoda. And the Talmud is describing that they were brought to be executed because it doesn't even tell us why. It says, Atyua le Matai. So they brought the students Matai and Amrilei Matai Yehareg. Matai is brought before them and he says, how can you kill me? My name is Matai. The verse says, Matai avo vere pnei Elokim. Matai will come. Matai literally means when. King David says, when will I come and see the face of God? So he says, my name is Matai. The verse says, Matai will come and see the face of God. I am Matai. I will come and see the face of God. The verse says about me, I'm still destined to see God's face. You see the play on words? So this is what he said to the courts. So the court said, Amulei in Matai Yareg. They said, yeah, we're going to kill you. Dichtiv, because the verse says, Matai Yamut Ve'avad Shemo. When it discusses an evil person, it says, when will he finally die and his name will be eradicated? So if you say that the word when in Tanakh refers to you, so then we can understand it. Matai, when, will die, meaning you, Matai, will die, and your name will be eradicated. Okay? Atyu le-Nakai, they brought Nakai before them, and he said, Nakai Yareg, you're going to kill me, Nakai. Nakai is like clean. The verse says, Naki ve-Tzadik al-Tarog, don't kill the one who's clean and just. I'm clean, that's my name, clean, you can't kill me. Amulei, they said to him, in Nakai Yareg. They said, yeah, Mr. Clean, you're going to die. Because the verse says, "B'misterim yarog naki." The verse is describing an evil person. He kills those that are clean, only in the cloak of secrecy. So, "B'misterim in secrecy yarog naki." He kills naki, the clean. So you see, the verse says the clean gets killed. So yeah, we're going to kill you. Okay. It seems almost humorous. Atyu le-Netzer. They brought Netzer in. Netzer said, "Netzer, you're going to kill Netzer." The verse says about King David, the Netzer, Netzer is a young branch, Mishoroshav Yifre, will flourish from the roots of David. They told him, yeah, we're going to, and he says, my name is Netzer, I'm a young branch. Now you can't, it says the young branch will flourish, you can't kill me. So they said, yeah, we're going to kill you, because the verse says, V'ata ushlachta mikivrecha, kinetzer nitav. The verse is in Isaiah, and there it describes one of the wicked people who will be thrown out of his grave, like a young branch that's been disgusting. So you see, a young branch could also be disgusting. You're going to be executed. They brought Bonai. Bonai said, you're killing Bonai. The verse says, B'ni b'chori Yisrael, my firstborn, my chosen is Israel. And I'm B'nai, Bonai, I'm the son. It says I'm the chosen. How could he kill me? They said, yes, B'ni Bonai, you're going to die. The verse says, God says to Pharaoh, I will kill your firstborn son. So you see, the son, Bonai, could die. Atyua le-Toda, they brought the fifth disciple, and this disciple was called Toda. He said, you're going to kill me. Toda means thanks. The verse says, Mizmo le-Toda, give praise to thanks. How could you kill thanks? My name is thanks. You can't kill me. They said, yeah, we're going to kill you. The verse says, Zovech todai chabdanini. He who sacrifices a sacrifice of thanks is honoring me, God says. So, that's it. Okay, you read the Talmud and it sounds almost humorous. So Rashi says, Kovim la malchutayu. These people, these five students of Yeshu, were high up there in the aristocracy. And they had a good relationship with the king. And even though their claims were ridiculous, they had been found guilty of whatever it was, the Talmud doesn't tell us over here, and technically the courts didn't have to answer their claims, but even though their claims were ridiculous, when you're close to the king and you make a claim, the courts have to answer the claim. So as ridiculous as the claims were, the courts had to give them an answer because it couldn't be shown on the court record books that the claims were made and they weren't answered. So says the Ramban. Just one second. Ve'al ha'derech hazeh, and going with this way of respecting and understanding that something that's close to the king has to be answered, even as ridiculous as it may be. Ani kotev dvarim sheyeshavti. That's why I'm writing my response. Al ta'tua peripul shekdeach tavshilo v'rabim, about the foolishness of this Jew who became an apostate, which in Talmudic terms is called he burnt his pot publicly. Bifnei Adoneinu HaMelech v'chachamav yotzav, his claims before our master, the king, and his wise men and his advisors. Yarum odo v'tinasei malchuto, may this king's glory be exalted, may his kingship be raised. So the Ramban is telling us something here. He's saying, technically, this is ridiculous. I don't even have to answer it. But just like the sages saw fit to tell us the answers they gave to cover the answer, the claims that were given by someone who's close to the king, so do I feel I have to record answers that were given to someone who was close to the king. So whether the claims have merits or not, they don't have merits. And even so, I do have to write down the answers. Yes? This story is taking place 800 years ago.
No. You said King Jacob.
In the time of the Talmud, we don't know. Let's wait, because that too will be dealt with within this argument. Let's hold off on that.
There's a whole sugya in regards to who is Yeshua. Many
references. There are Ramban here. We'll discuss that. Let's wait and see.
Like being a generic figure, almost.
Let's see.
People contrast that.
Siva oti Adoneinu HaMelech litvakech im peripul beichalo befanav. My master, the king, ordered me to debate this monk, this priest, peripul, in his chambers before him and before his advisors in Barcelona. Va'an va'omar. And so I replied and I said, Esek mitzvat Adoni HaMelech. I will do as my master, the king, commands. One condition. You have to permit me to speak as I wish. I mevakesh. And so I'm asking permission of speech from the king and this person who was head of the Dominican, he was there, some high position in the church. And all the friends that are here, all the representatives of the church that are present, I ask permission to speak. Ana peri rimon, uvilvat shelo tedaber bizyonot. So the representative of the church says, on condition that you don't disgrace the church. Amati lahem. So I said to them, notice, the Ramban is standing alone. They have a whole team out there. Amati lahem. I said to them, eini rotze liyot bedinchem al ze. אבל שאומר כל רצוני בעניין הביקוח כאשר אתם אומרים כל רצונכם. I said to them, I don't want to end up being judged by you over this, but I'll tell you, all I'm asking is that with regard to the debate, I be given permission to speak, to say my say as much as I have to say, just like you're going to say as much as you have to say. ואני יש לי דעת לדבר בדרך מוסר. I know how to speak in a respectful way. But it has to be in accordance with what I want to say, and they all gave me permission to say as I please. So it was granted permission to talk. So I began, and I said, the arguments of the nations and the Jews are with regard to many things. Of customs, of how we behave, any kare munat luyabem. They are all really not the center of our argument. We have many differences, but the core difference between us, the root of the difference between us, the difference of faith between us, is not in these behaviors. אבל איני רוצה להתווכח בחצר הנכבד הזה, אלא בדברים שכל הדין תלוי בהם. I don't want to discuss details with you guys. let's deal with the core issues. I don't want to, in this courtyard, I do not want to discuss with you details. I do want to discuss with you the heart of the matter, the prime differences between us. So they all said, Yafe amarta. Good idea. You're right. So we agreed the first thing we should discuss is the Messiah. Did the Messiah already come like the Christians believe? Or is he still going to come as the Jews believe? And after that we'll discuss, is the Messiah really a godly being? Is he really God? Or is he a human being born from a man and a woman? And after that we will discuss, do the Jews hold the true Torah or do the Christians have the true Torah? Okay, to the heart of the matter. Right. Good point. And so the Peripul, who's the Christian, he's the prime debater here, he said, Shehu yochiach min haTalmud shelanu shekvar ba Mashiach asher hanviim meidim alav. He said, I'll prove from your Talmud that the Mashiach that the prophet spoke about has already come. I'll prove to you from the Talmud, he said. Talmud.
No? For me.
Okay. Aniti v'amalti. So I answered and said, Aval kodem shenitvakach b'ze, before we argue about that, ani mvakesh sheyoreini v'yomar li hech ze be'efshar. Before we argue whether that it really says in the Talmud that the Mashiach already came, I want you first to explain to me how is it possible that it will say in the Talmud that Mashiach came. Ki me'az she'amelech b'fravencia u'v'mkomot rabim shamati she'amar kadavar hazeh la'yudim rabim v'ani tamea bo me'od. Because from the time that the king is in Provencia and in other places, I heard that he said this to many Jews, and I'm baffled by this. V'yaneni beze, and I want you to answer me, he says to the Christian. Hayotze lomar ki chachmei Talmud ma'aminim b'Yeshu shehu ha-Mashiach. Does he mean to say that the wise men of the Talmud really believed that Yeshu was the Mashiach? Ve'eminu shehu ish gamur ve'eloh be'emet kefi machshevet ha-Nutzrim. Did they believe that he was really a human being and completely human and also truthfully God, as the Christians believe? Everyone knows that the story of Yeshu happened during the period of the Second Temple. And he was born and was killed before the destruction of the Second Temple. This is a given. And the wise men of the Talmud lived after the destruction of the temple, for example, Rabbi Akiva and his contemporaries. And those who taught the Mishnah, Rabbi Yudan Asi, Rabbi and Rabbi Nasan, Hayu Yamim Rabim Achar Churban. They lived a long time after the destruction of the temple. Certainly Ravashi, who compiled the Talmud and wrote it, Shaya Achar Churban Kedal Mot Shana. Ravashi was about 400 years after the destruction of the temple. V'imayu Achachamim Eile Ma'aminim B'mshichut Yeshu. And if all these wise men really believed that Yeshu was the Messiah, and that he is true, and his religion is true, if they really wrote what Peripul claims he's going to prove from them that they wrote, if that's so, how did they remain Jews? How did they remain with the religion they had originally? But you, Peripul, you claim you're going to show me from the Talmud that the rabbi said that he was the Messiah. Well, wait a second. Then how come for 400 years later they're all still practicing Judaism? No one went in his footsteps. They were Jews. They remained Jews. They remained with the Jewish religion throughout their days and they died Jews. They, their children, their students, who heard everything they taught. And why didn't they do like he did? You know, he became an apostate. He left Judaism, went to Christianity. Why didn't they all do that? He's going to prove to me that in the Talmud it says Yeshu, that the Talmud accepted Yeshu. Hold it. Wait a second. So why didn't everyone do what he did? He says that from the Talmud he came to the conclusion that Yeshua was telling the truth. Okay, wait a second. So then why didn't anyone in the Talmud do what he did? Why don't we find that in the Talmud and in the Mishnah? He says that the Talmud convinced him to leave Judaism and go to Christianity. Wait a second. The rabbis of the Talmud, their students, they lived as Jews, they died as Jews, just like us today. They taught us this way of life. The Ramban says, I'm just continuing what they taught us. You're saying they believed in Yeshua. How does that work? Everything we're doing here as Jews is in accordance with the Talmud. This is all in accordance with the way the wise men of the Talmud behaved and did from the day the Talmud was compiled till today. The whole point of Talmud is to teach us the customs of the Torah, the mitzvot, and how our forefathers behaved in the temple, the tradition they had from the prophets, from Moshe Rabbeinu. And if really the rabbis of the Talmud believed in Yeshua and his religion, how come they didn't do what he did? How come they didn't convert? Why didn't they do like him? He, and here he throws a jibe, who understands their words in Talmud better than they understood it themselves. That's how the Ramban ends his claim. Ana Peripul v'amar. So Peripul answers and says, "Elu divrei arichut levatel avikuach, aval al kol panim tishma ma she'omar." He says, "Oh, that's a long claim what you've said to undo my claim, but at least hear me out." Notice the Ramban really played a trick here. The Ramban didn't hear him out. The Ramban cut him off and said, "Wait a second! It cannot be that there's any validity in what you're saying." And he says, That'll take too long to discuss that, but hear me out on this. So, on the one hand, he's got a point. You know, the Ramban didn't let him finish his claim. Hetchil v'ama. V'omar aleihem. So the Ramban says, Aval zeli raya brura shelo yamer dvarim sheyeh beim mamash. But I think I've brought you a clear proof that you're not going to say anything worth hearing. The Ramban says to him. And therefore, I don't really see any point in hearing you out, but because my master, the king, wants me to hear you out, so I will. So Peripul says, the verse says in Torah that the tribe of Judah will always rule. There will never, lo yasur shevet miyuda, the staff of rulership will not leave the tribe of Yehuda. Ad ki yavo Shiloh. The pasuk says, until they come to Shiloh, so Yaakov blesses Yehuda, until Shiloh he will rule. Rulership will be by Yehuda till Shiloh, and Shiloh is, says Peripul, he's making the claim, the Christian claim is, Shua Mashiach. Shiloh is a reference to the Messiah. Hareisha Navi Omer, so the prophet is saying, Ki lo'olam yeh liyuda koach, that the power will remain within the tribe of Yehuda until the Messiah who will come out of Yehuda. So if so, hayom she'en lachem lo shevet echad v'lo mchokek, today you guys have no power, you Jews, fa'ba Mashiach shu mizrael, the Messiah must have come. Because God says, Yehuda will rule till the Messiah comes. This is his interpretation. And the Messiah will take over, v'lo hamemshala, and then he's going to take the throne, he's going to rule. So you guys have no more power, you Jews. So the Messiah must have come. Now that you hear this claim, you'll open up a Chumash. You'll see our tradition in understanding the Pasuk, and you'll see that the claim, we don't grant this claim any validity. But the Ramban is going to disprove the claim from historical facts. He's not going to argue with him about his interpretation of the Pasuk. Notice that the Ramban does not go head on. He doesn't say, well, that's not really what the Pasuk is saying. You know, who said Shiloh is Mashiach? Where'd you get that from? Shiloh's name of place. And anyways, okay, let's see. The Ramban just disproves it from the facts. The Ramban doesn't take him head on. If he wanted to, he could take apart this claim from the context. The Ramban doesn't bother doing that. Aniti v'amalti. So I responded and said, "En kavanat ha'navi lomar שלא תהיה ממלכת יהודה בטלה כלל בשום זמן. The prophet does not mean to say that the kingdom of Yehuda will never be undone forever until Mashiach comes. That's not what it means. אלא אמר שלא תסוב ותפסיק לגמרי ממנו. What the prophet is saying is that it will never be removed from him with permanence. But he's not saying that forever he's going to be king. It just means that ultimately he will be king. The kingship will always end up coming back to him. והכוונה שכל זמן שתהיה מלוכה לישראל, ליהודה היא ראויה. All the verse is saying is that when the Jews do have a king, the kingship belongs in the tribe of Yehuda. ואם תתבטל מלכותם מפני חטא, and even if they lose the throne, if they sin and they lose the right to have a king, when they regain the throne, the one who's supposed to be a leader at that period is Yehuda. That's all the verse means. And I'll prove it, he says. He doesn't go into the text. He goes into history. Look in the history books. If you have a long period of time, when the Jews didn't have a king, long before Yeshu came along, the Jews had a king, and it wasn't from the tribe of Yehuda. According to your interpretation of the prophecy, there will be kingship in Yehuda and Yeshu. Yehuda and Mashiach, whoever Mashiach is. But there will never be a period where it's not neither this nor that, because that's your proof. You're saying you don't have the kingship, so Mashiach obviously came already. So wait a second, but there was a long period before Yeshu where the Jews had a king, and it wasn't from Yehuda, which according to you doesn't fit with the prophet. And you have a long period of history that we didn't have either one, for there was no king. After the destruction of the first temple, the 70 years after the destruction of the first temple, there was no king. According to his logic, the Mashiach came already then, at the end of the first temple. Yeah? Half a millennium before Yeshu. If that's the logic. So he says, there were 70 years where there was no king, not in Yehuda nor in Israel, no kingship at all for the Jewish people. ובבית שני, לא מלך ביהודה, רק סרובבל ובניו, ימים למספר. And then you go on to the second temple period. Most of the second temple period, the kings were not of Judea. Only in the very beginning, when the king was Zerubbabel and his children, there was a short period where the kings of the second temple were Judean. And then you have 380 years of the second temple where the king is not from Yehuda. Ad Hachuban, for most of the period of the second temple, till the destruction, the kings were all first the Hasmonean kingdom, who were the Kohanim. The Hasmoneans weren't from the tribe of Yehuda. And then when their slave Herod led a rebellion, killed out all the Hasmonean kingdom, took the throne, and then his descendants, who were all slaves. They were really, Herod was a slave of the Hasmonean empire. Herod, he and his descendants, they became kings. Nothing to do with Yehuda. So most of the period of the Second Temple, before Yeshu, you have almost four centuries, 380 years, where there was no king from Yehuda. And certainly throughout the period that the nation was in exile, the nation didn't have a land, the nation wasn't united, no king. So what do you do with that? Historically, it says, if that's what the prophet was saying, so how does that work? So he's got an answer. He says, "Botan hazmanim kulam, afal pi shelo hayu melachim, hayah lehem memshela." Throughout those periods, even though Yehuda wasn't king, they had control. They did have a position of leadership. Shekach pirshu b'talmud. This is what the Talmud says. Lo yasur shevet miYehuda elu rashei hagaluyot shebevavel shorodim tam b'shevet. The verse that says Yehuda will always rule refers to the heads of the Jews in exile. When the Jews were in exile in Babylon, the Talmud itself says that the Pasuk gives the leadership to Yehuda. This is a reference to the fact that in Babylon, the leaders were from the tribe of Yehuda.
Vexler.
What?
They called Vexler.
I don't know. In Talmud it's called Rashei Galuyot. I don't know what it's called in English. Okay.
So he was quite a Talmud Chacham. It's much more known.
We usually debated with people who studied Talmud. Look, they censored our Talmud. So they studied it. ומחוקק מבין רגליו אלו בני מניו של הלל שמלמדים תורה ברבים. The Talmud says, the continued rulership is after the destruction of the second temple. the descendants of Hillel who teach Torah. Notice that he's refuting his own claim, because he's already saying that those who teach Torah are from the tribe of Yehuda, and that's a fulfillment of the verse. The Ramban doesn't take him to task over that. But technically, he's already said that he has to accept the Talmudic understanding of the verse, which once he does that, then according to the Talmud, we still have leaders from Yehuda, because they're the ones who teach Torah. They were the master teachers of the time, long after Yeshu. Technically, he's already refuted his claim, because long after Yeshu, the Talmud says this about the leaders, that the heads of the academies were from tribe Yehuda, but the Ramban doesn't even point that out to him. That's not... I'm just saying, you know, as you read it, you can't miss that. V'ayom en lachem smicha yidua b'talmud. So today, you no longer have the smicha, v'nitbatla gam hamemshalahi. So you can no longer rule over the people, because you don't have that tradition of smicha. V'en lachem hayom ra'uy likarei rebi. No one among you is fit to be called Rebbe. Technically, we'll see in a second, he's overstating his case. And the fact that we call you like maestro, rabbi, leader, how do you translate maestro?
Maestro,
okay. Is really a mistake. Notice how he's jiving at the Ramban. And you're a liar that you're taking that title, Mr. Nachmanides. End of claim. Says the Ramban, Aniti kimhatel bo. I answered as though I was making fun of him. You know, I got to play along with the game. So I answered, says the Ramban, Enza mina vikuach. Really, this doesn't pertain to our argument. But you're not telling the truth. She'en Rebbe maestro. Rebbe doesn't equal maestro. It's not the same word. So, you know, you're saying, I don't have a right to maestro. Maestro isn't Rebbe. It's two different terms. Kiravu maestro. Maestro is like master, right? Master is Rav. Rav, in Talmudic terms, is master. Rebbe is not Rav. Meaning he's saying, you're right. The term Rebbe we no longer have. The term Rav we do. The term Rav is translated into maestro. So technically, you're saying Rebbe equals maestro, and I don't have a right to the title maestro. Doesn't pertain to us, but technically you equated two terms that are not synonymous. Uvelos smicha nikreim Rav b'Talmud. And you find throughout the Talmud, the same Talmud that says we don't have the smicha anymore, does call the rabbis Rav, because Rav, rabbi, is a term that we do still have. We don't have the term Rebbe, we do have the term Rav. Aval ani modeh ki ani maestro velo talmito. But I agree with you, I'm not a master. You're right. I'm not a good student. I wasn't a good student in the academy. I agree, you're right. I don't deserve the title. Amati zevedech musar. I just wanted, you know, out of honesty, to set the record straight that the term is correct to be used today, but you're right, I don't deserve it. Yeah.
Sounds to me like other people who listen to this conversation are probably much more intelligent than the guy who
this. Let's see, because you're going to see, you know, they're not going to have that much better claims. If you've read through claims, Christian claims, you know, you'll see that the claims don't amount to that much more. You know, there are other claims. You know better than me. So let's wait and continue.
No, it's important to understand how he's answering, because his answers must be understood from the other side, from the other publican, that it's ridiculous what this apostate is asking. Others must understand that there is something wrong, otherwise they wouldn't let him speak.
Let's see. Let's see. We have to see. Meaning, where there are a few points on the point of Mashiach. If he came with a claim, I understand Torah better than you. That's one thing. You know, if he came and said, we think that what the Torah says, which is what Christians today say, we say we understand Torah better than you. It's a new thing. Back in the day, they weren't saying that. They were saying, remember, Christianity began with Yeshu, who was in Talmudic times, and Jews. It evolved. It took a very long time for Christianity to really be defined as its own thing. Today, that they're standing on good footing, they have their own following, they're the masters, it's one thing. Back then, you're still talking about a period where they were growing, and the claim was more about, we're legitimate and you're not. Today, they're less concerned with you're not legitimate. I'm saying, meaning the whole world, they're legitimate. Everyone views them. They're the masses, you know. How many people do we number? So, throughout, I'd say, a millennium after Yeshu, there was a lot of concern with us not being legitimate. That concern died down over the period, you know, as time went on, and they grew larger and larger in numbers, so then it was less of a concern to prove us wrong. Meaning,
still, that, I don't know, the claim that they can prove from Talmud, saying that today, I don't know if any modern Christian theologian will say such a thing.
Right.
It's outrageous.
So right. I agree. Okay.
I mean, they disregard it as invalid, though.
I don't know. I don't know their position on Talmud.
The general Christian take on the Torah Shebaal Peh.
The ones who know that, they know that they're wrong. Still,
I mean, that gives the whole legitimacy to, as the Rav is saying, to the Mefarsh, the Psukim, to the analysis of the
I don't know enough.
Disregard of the Torah Shebaal Peh. They have what the Rav is saying, that they have the confidence today to be able to actually claim that they have a better understanding of the Torah, is that they're disregarding Torah Shebaal Peh.
I haven't yet met enough Christians who really knew the text from the sources, meaning any time that Christians tried to convince me, their claims were at least as ridiculous as his. They quoted verses that don't exist in the original text. They quoted things that they knew from a King James Version, and when I, who happened to have a Tanakh, said, wait, let's look at the text inside. Let's just look at the text you're talking to me about. They ended up blushing. Ah. Meaning, I haven't yet met someone who had any legitimate claim. Be it people who attacked me on internet, or people who attacked me on an airplane or in an airport, I haven't yet had the privilege of meeting someone who was who had any legitimacy to anything they said, anything worth answering. You know, anything that anyone who had studied Tanakh a little bit understood the makeup and the language. Meaning, I don't know. I'm not saying they don't have better claims, you know, but I'm just saying I haven't yet met them.
You probably will never find someone.
I don't know. I'm not looking for them. They come to me. Yeah. I'm not. I never look to argue. I don't give my address. I'm not looking to argue. I'm not. Yeah. Even in the airports, by the way, I never argued. They initiated the arguments, and there were always listeners around, or if they tried to convince the guy sitting next to me why he shouldn't put on his tefillin, because where does it say that in Tanakh? So I just opened the Tanakh and said, hey buddy, you're doing right. You know, you have a guy with a cuckoo who just came to Israel and he doesn't know much about Judaism, and he finally decided he's going to put on tefillin, and then this guy sees this, so a Christian monk goes over to him and says, you know, do you even know what you're doing? Does it even make sense? Does it say it anywhere in Tanakh? So, I couldn't just sit down quietly and see this guy try to convince him that he's doing wrong. So I said, hey, you don't have to believe Shema Yisrael Hashem Kenu Shem Echad. You have to explain that. But it does say in Shema about tefillin. So he says to me, where? So good for me, I had a Tanakh on hand. I said, okay, I'll read it. So the guy was, I'm saying, you know, these were the situations where I had to actually get into an argument with someone. I don't look for it. I'm not interested. You know, God.
There's a switch. Either you have only these people, or you have the people, and then suddenly say, yes, you know, we changed.
Right, revision.
What do you mean we changed?
That's more complicated.
There's a certain level, especially in the Catholic Church, where you suddenly find people who say,
we change it because we have our own tradition how to interpret the Torah. Right. Yeah, okay. So I returned to the point in hand and I said to him, Ani yodiacha she'en hakavana l'rabotenu zal lefaresh hapasuk ela b'malchut mamash ela she'encha mevin din v'alacha אלא מעט באגדות אשר הגלת עצמך בהן. He says, I want to let you know that the rabbis didn't mean to explain the pasuk about anything other than real kingship. When the rabbi said that Yehuda will always have the throne, they meant to interpret it with regard to kingship exactly. But you don't understand Talmud, you don't understand Halacha, and that's why I wanted, the Ramban I don't think is just coming to jibe at him. I think the Ramban means what he says. You don't understand how to learn Talmud, you don't understand Halacha, the only thing you understand is the stories in Talmud which you're used to reading. So that's what you're used to, so that's how you interpreted it. But you don't understand it. And what the Ramban is saying is that really, in Talmudic terms, we could understand this Ramban in light of a Rambam that defines what the position of a Nasi is. But I don't want to go into that. Let's hear the Ramban out. Meaning, technically, the definition of the positions that are given are really positions that are representative of the throne. Meaning, Nasi, by definition, says the Rambam, is the king. When you don't have a king, you have the Nasi. When you don't have a king, whatever. I can't go into it right now. I'm just saying, the Ramban is like the Rambam says. Why do I have to write my work for the common folk? Because in order to learn Talmud, you have to know what each word means exactly. And if you don't know how to define each word, you're going to read and have an approximate understanding. So you don't really understand what you're reading. So, and that you have to have tradition. You can't just open up a Talmud and just read. An art scroll ain't going to cut it, guys. Art scroll is a good start, but you know, with all due respect to art scroll, you need a tradition and to understand each term. So I value art scroll. They do a great job. Just saying, you know, you need a tradition for each word, what each word means. And so he says, you know, you're used to reading the stories in Talmud, and that's the little you know in Talmud, and that's why you interpret these lines in Talmud this way. And what our sages really mention over here, this is technically a halachic concept the Talmud is discussing. Technically, a person cannot judge alone. In order to have a court case, you need three judges. And if a person judges alone, then if he made a mistake in judgment, he really has to pay. He has to pay for what he judged. The only time that a person is authorized to be a judge, and that authorization means if he made a mistake, it happens. It's like, what's it called? The insurance doctors have liability? It's liability insurance. Malpractice, right. Where technically when a person gets a license from the king or the nasi, what that license says is this person is entitled to judge. If he judges you, he's going to do the best possible job. He knows what he's doing. And if he makes a mistake, it's not his fault and he doesn't have to pay. So ordinarily, you can't judge alone unless you have this license from the king or the nasi, who in halachic terms is the king, which we understand a little bit better in light of the Rambam. And what our sages are saying over here, in those lines that you're quoting, is that in this period of exile, being that we do have descendants of the throne, descendants of the Davidic dynasty, who have some authority that they were granted by the non-Jewish kings, and that is the Reish Galuta, what do you call them in English?
Excellent.
The exilarch, okay. Kegon Rashi Galuyot Shebevavel Menzei Eretz Yisrael. For example, the heads of the exile or the Nesim in Israel. Yeshnei Netinat Rashut L'Smicha. What the Talmud is saying is that they still have a right to give this license. The Talmud is discussing a halachic concept with regard to this right that a king could give license to be a judge, which is also a position of authority. Technically, we have no possibility of giving this license. What the Talmud is saying is that this is a continuation of the kingship that we do have today, and that is the capacity to give this license. And if you're going to take, and here the Ramban is a little bit pointing out to him the inconsistency in his logic. He's saying, if you're going to take this concept of giving license, that license existed for 400 years after Yeshu. If you're going to take that verse which says the continuation of the Davidic dynasty is the leaders, well, that continues for 400 years after Yeshu. So that doesn't fit your claim either. Okay, so we're going to have to pick up over here. We're in the middle Should we go two more minutes? Finish the concept? Okay. Ki ein dat chachmei Talmud. The sages of the Talmud did not mean to say sheyehu mizera shevet umchokek asher liyuda. The sages of the Talmud did not mean to say, like you're claiming, that Yeshu is the continuation. He is the authority that continues from the Davidic dynasty, from the tribe of Yehuda. Aval hanavi heftichol liyuda sheyeh malchut Yisrael shelo. All the prophet was promising the tribe of Yehuda was that when we have kingship in Israel, the one who's entitled to the throne is the tribe of Yehuda. Val malchut kmura heftichol. And the Navi was promising him that he's going to have a complete throne. Meaning, if you want to understand what the prophet is saying, he's talking about being king. He's talking about ruling over Israel. And even though the prophet promises Yehuda he will be king, we had a long period in our history where we didn't have it. Yehuda did not have the throne. Technically, here the Ramban is pointing out another inconsistency in what he says. The Ramban claimed against him. He said, you have 70 years we were in Babylon. Where do you find Yehuda ruled Israel there? So he says, but the Talmud says the heads of the Babylon are from Judah. That's inaccurate. The Talmud says that about the post-second destruction. The Talmud does not say that about the period between the first and second temple. Meaning, in this answer, he did not really answer Nachmanides, which is what the Ramban is pointing out, by the way. He's saying, you know, you had those 70 years, and during those 70 years, there was no leader. No leader from Judah, no other leader. The Jews were out in Babylon. You had the prophet Jeremiah. You had other people. Jeremiah was a Kohen. You know, you had other leaders. You didn't have anyone from Yehuda, because that's not what the prophet meant to say. He meant to say, when there's a throne, the tribe of Yehuda belongs on the throne. What about during the period of the second temple, where our kings throughout most of the period of the second temple were from the Kohanim and their slaves? And your answer doesn't answer those 380 years before Yeshu, because during that period we didn't have a resh galut nor a nasi, kanesiut v'rashut lemalchei kohanim v'shoftehem v'shotrehem v'la'asher yashu be'enehem, because the leadership was given to the kings of the Kohanim and to their judges and their policemen and whoever they saw fit, they appointed. So during that period, those 380 years, there was nothing for Yehuda. Azana peri piri diginova. At that point, one of the people sitting on the side, one of the listeners, answered and said, Ginova, from Genova. Genova, yeah. I guess, okay.
This was a
gathering. So then he spoke up and he said, "Zemetu." This is true what the Ramban is saying. Shena katuv omer ela shelo ipasek legamre. All the verse really means to say is that the kingship will not end completely from Yehuda; that it ultimately will come back. Aval yachol liot bo shvita bagar belaz. But there could be a pause. He's right. The Ramban is right on that. The verse doesn't mean to say there'll never be a pause. The Ramban has just proven that in our history there wasn't a pause. And the Ramban seizes the opportunity
that there was a pause.
And then, so this Italian priest speaks up and says, Nachmanides is right. The verse doesn't mean to preclude a pause. So this has already disproven his claim. He said, there can't be a pause, and if there's a pause, the Messiah must have come. So he says, no, Ramban is right. We Christians also have to accept that there could be a pause. There doesn't have to be a consistent Judean king until the Messiah comes. The Ramban has proven his point, and they don't say the Ramban has proven it, but he says, yeah, of course, us Christians, we also go there. We go there, right. So the Ramban seizes the opportunity and says, "Yine peri peri pasak adin kedvarai." You see, he's ruled down right. The Ramban isn't looking for, doesn't give him a chance to say, well, I don't agree with him. The Ramban says, you see, come on, no. He agrees. So, Amar Peripiri. So then he says, Ani lo pasakti din. He says, I didn't give ruling here, the Italian priest says. Ki 70 shana shel Babel zman muatu. Because 70 years in Babylon is, it's still a short period in terms of history. ורבים אשר זכו הבית הראשון, כמו שכתוב בספר עזרא, and there were still many people around during the beginning of the second temple who remembered the first temple, as is recorded in the book of Ezra, וזה יקרא ביטול, הוא בגר בלעז. And 70 years, that could be like, a, you know, there's a break. How do you translate? No, he's saying, you know, sometimes the courts can take, what's it called, when the Knesset has a pagra, they have a recess. Yeah, so he says 70 years, you could call that a recess. But he says, Ramban, I'm not with you all the way. 70 years could be a recess. It's been 1,000 years and you don't have anyone on the throne. That's no recess. What? He's saying, since the destruction of the second temple. So after the destruction of the second temple, you have no king. So Yeshu must be the Messiah, because you have kings leading into Messiah. You'll tell me, no, there could be a recess. A recess can't be 1,000 years. So he says, I agree with the Ramban. There could be a recess. I mean, I can't disprove the Ramban, but a recess can't be 1,000 years.
The priest is saying,
there can be a recess, but not a big recess. If it's big, then the Messiah had to have come.
Isn't he shooting himself?
He's saying, I can't argue with Nachmanides that there were 70 years that there was no throne. He hasn't answered the Ramban's claim of 430 years. But he's saying, you know, you can't have such a big recess. Now, he might say that 430 years is a recess. You know, I don't know what his limits are for a recess. He's saying 70 years you could have a recess, but you can't have a 1,000-year recess. We hold that you could have thousands of years until whenever it's not a recess. We don't hold there always has to be a king from Yehuda. When we'll have a throne, then Yehuda belongs on it. And even then, there's more to be discussed. It's not so simple
and
the way.
How does the Christian bring it as a challenge?
He says, he's saying, I stick to the guns that there has to be a Judean king until Mashiach comes. If there is no Judean king, Mashiach must have come.
So that means, okay, that Jews,
right.
Israel.
So Nachmanides says, wait a second, but he hasn't answered Nachmanides' claim. What about the period of the Second Temple where for 430 years there was no Judean king? Mashiach should have come 430 years before Yeshu. If you're saying there's going to be a Judean king till Mashiach, so Mashiach was 430 years late. Yeah? So he hasn't answered that. There's more to be discussed. The Ramban is going to rebut. I think we're out of time. I don't know if you guys want to continue. I thought we'd finish by now.
Is that short?
It's not that long, but I guess it's not that short either. Okay. It's only like 10 pages long.
So what Joe said, the observations, it's fascinating why he starts with Moshiach.
Right.
Is that what perhaps historically that was the first thing that split them? The split between...
I think that's really at the root of everything, no? Isn't that the root of everything?
Wasn't that the split?
That's where it all begins, you know. Everything else is a derivative of that, but that's really where it all begins.
Because like Christianity also did not define itself so clearly, like dogmatically, different from...
I don't want to go into that, right. That's a long... I purposely didn't want to go into that, you know. That's another point. The Christianity of today is nothing like the Christianity of 100 years ago, which is nothing like the Christianity of 500 years before that, which was nothing like the Christianity of 500 years before that. Meaning they're really, Christianity is a totally different religion than it was 100 years ago today, which is totally different than what it was 500 years before that. Totally different religion. And the same thing from 500 years before that. Am I right? I'm right. It's really a totally different religion. But that's, we won't go into that. That's not our point here. And even okay, that's a long discussion.
Apparently, it was a huge machloket when the first convention of Nicaea, right? Nicaea, whether Jesus was a divine figure or not.
In this convention,
it was like
people should have been there invited purposely. So
say like it was machloket whether he was hundreds of years later, if he had any godliness or not. Within Christianity.
Okay, we're stopping in the middle. Tov, I don't know when do we pick up again? 2 weeks from now, Thursday, what?
I don't know.
10.
I don't know what you're... but we wouldn't finish anyway.
No, so. I want guys to get to bed early. You guys have...